Welcome to the BCMA Podcast. Today we're joined by the team at Accession Consulting. Accession Consulting provides design thinking and strategic planning services for the cultural sector. They specialize in user research, needs assessments, and facilitating strategic planning and creative thinking sessions. Accession Consulting helped the BCMA with an economic impact survey. And joining us to talk about the survey is Brian Smith, a founder of Accession Consulting. Brian's been working with the cultural sector for over a decade, including small museums, regional archives, and art galleries. Also joining us is Laura Hebert, a founder of Accession Consulting. Laura is an experienced creative professional with skills in research, communications, and collaboration. And finally joining us today is Esther Raplinski. Esther has over 10 years of experience working with government, museums, and other cultural organizations. Thank you for the team at Accession Consulting for joining us today.
Thank you all for joining me today to talk about the economic impact report that Accession Consulting worked on. To start things off, would you mind briefly introducing yourselves?
Totally. Yeah, well, thank you for having us, Ryan. It has been great to work on this project, and it's great to talk a little bit more about it and kind of unpack our lessons learned. So we're a group of three consultants who provide design thinking and strategic planning services for the cultural sector. We've all got backgrounds in the cultural sector, but also in government, design, education, and planning. So we're grounded in that kind of cultural sector roots, but we've got that design thinking background as well. And we kind of formed to bring those design thinking methods to the sector in an approachable and affordable way. And so we work on things like, you know, digital strategies, needs assessment, strategic planning, that kind of thing. So my name's Brian. I worked in museums for many years, and then worked on a government team doing service design, and also worked as an instructional designer before that. Maybe I'll pass it over to Laura.
My name is Laura Hebert, and I have a background working in libraries and archives, and also in the public sector with the BC government doing service design work. Yeah, joined in with this group of Accession doing some consulting work.
And I am Esther Raplinski. I have a background in museums, education, and government. Worked in parliamentary education for a number of years, and then spent the last few years doing some economic development and technology sector work within government.
Great. Well, we are happy to have you and are very appreciative of the great work you've done on this economic impact survey. And for some background for people listening, this survey was born out of a conversation we were having with Heritage BC. And we were talking about how often government wants the value of the museum and heritage sector framed through the lens of economic impact. And between Heritage BC and ourselves, we had lots of anecdotal examples of museums, cultural organizations, heritage sites who had tremendous local economic impact and had the potential to revitalize local economies. But these examples that we had were largely anecdotal, and it was something that we hadn't looked into with any degree of focus. So we thought it would be great to look more closely into the economic impact that local museums and heritage sites have in their communities. And that's when we approached your consulting company to help us do some of that research. Now that we've produced these six case studies, I'm just interested in chatting with you about some of the things that you've learned about how museums and heritage sites can impact their local economies. So now that you've completed this survey and we have a bit of distance on the big picture, what are some broad themes that seem impactful to you from this survey?
It might be a good place to start with the observation that kind of happened a little bit organically, but really lended itself to the, you know, strange times we're living in amidst a pandemic, insofar that we started this project looking into five institutions in BC across the province, communities of Kimberley, Lytton, Sydney, Prince George, and Tumbler Ridge, and kind of looking at them as success stories. But in talking to all these different institutions, we discovered that all of their successes came out of kind of hard times or stories of kind of economic shifts, incidents like one museum burnt down and they lost their collection, or a mine shut down. It really kind of began to paint a picture of and of a kind of a time that we're living in right now.
A really strong theme that came out of these conversations was resiliency, the ability to cope and to adapt in the face of challenges. And I think museums and cultural organizations, especially those in smaller communities or more remote communities, do this really well. And yeah, so we pulled out four kind of main themes, and I'll speak to maybe a couple of them to start, that were key to this resilient approach and the sort of success of the projects. So the first one is scaling up. And this is something that can happen internally and externally. So thinking of this, success isn't just the number of visitors that come to the museum. It's not just how many staff they have. But it can also be tracking online metrics, increasing offerings, and it's something that you can look inside of the organization, find places that are a little outside of the comfort zone, and push into those and start to see the growth happening. And then also more externally, working with partner organizations was a really key element of these successful projects. So connecting with the community, connecting with government, local organizations or festivals, things that are being planned, and finding the space for the museum organization to scale upward and sort of outward into those spaces. Another theme that we pulled out of our research was the importance of increasing diversity, working to ensure that the organizations are connecting with and appealing to and engaging a diverse community. And so the case study organizations that we talked to, they had the most success when they were engaging with a cross-section of their community, focusing on different age groups, different interest groups, minority groups, people in the local area. Yeah, this resulted in projects and content that was in response to what people were interested in. So it was strong in that way. This could be working with Indigenous communities. Some of the organizations we talked to had been doing this for decades. Some of them had started more recently to strengthen those relationships. And yeah, increased diversity is a really key part of enabling an organization to be resilient and to be relevant and present in the community.
And I think you're right. This survey and study happened at a really interesting point in that we started this conversation in November when the world was pre-COVID, and then a lot of the research took place during the COVID crisis. And I think focusing on the idea of resiliency is an interesting theme that's emerged from this, because all communities now are in less solid financial and economic states than they were before the COVID crisis. And I think there's a tremendous opportunity for museums and heritage organizations to take leadership roles as we start thinking about what an economic recovery might look like. And I'm thinking specifically about your example from the Kimberley Underground Mining Railway.
Kimberley, in some ways, is almost the quintessential case study of a community that went through a really dramatic economic change. And as Laura was mentioning earlier, and Esther had pointed out as well, that a lot of our case studies started from this place of economic hardship or economic change and grew into something different. So in Kimberley, the mine shut down after, I think almost a century of operation. And not only was it an economic change, it was a really significant cultural change in the community. I mean, in talking to them, it wasn't only that the work for a large part of the community has now changed. The actual like sound of the community has changed. There aren't these fans running all the time anymore. All of a sudden, they were shut off, and the community was quiet. So, it was quite a dramatic shift, I think. And so, coming out of that, the underground mining railway is a really good example of how that community was able to take their knowledge and their resources and that community kind of heart and put it into something that kept that alive and allowed them to share their knowledge, not only with each other, but with visitors who come to that community as well. And so in that sense, I think, it's it's a really cool example of how something like that dramatic shift can be a real hardship on a community, but it can also be a real opportunity for a museum to become a leader within that change and take a role in moving forward and redefining what a new community looks like. And I think that's so important right now as we all look to, not only in COVID-19, we all need to think about what our communities will look like moving forward. But as we have these conversations surrounding race and equity, Black Lives Matter, you know, we need to think about what our communities will look like. And museums can certainly play a role in that.
You know, they didn't start out and said, oh, we need to turn this around and make money for our community. They started from a place of passion and wanting to share stories, which I think we're seeing a lot these days between the pandemic and the Black Lives Matter movement. They wanted to, you know, preserve their community and their culture, and they were passionate about what they did. And so it really started from a place, people and partnerships and, you know, representing that community. And they didn't have the intention to, I think, they didn't dream that things would look like they do today and they would have become such a big tourist attraction in their community. And it really kind of shows themes that we saw, what Laura mentioned about scaling up with diversity, the partnerships and the different community groups they work with, the different groups that they kind of reach out to between academic visitors. But the other two themes that we didn't quite get to, I think, are really evident here in that they're focused on their story. They're an underground mining railway. They're not covering everything. And they're also giving back to their community, which I think is important these days and during these kind of harder times, is they're seeking to train and kind of have a big focus on education.
It's that idea that the exact wording of the quote, but you know, a journey of a thousand miles begins with a single footstep. That if you are a museum who's interested in having an impact in your community, maybe the conversation shouldn't be how can we change significantly our community, but instead have a conversation about what are we passionate about and how can we share that passion. One of the examples I think that shows how a passion from a small organization can lead to big things is the Sydney Museum and their Lego Festival. Would you mind talking a bit about that example?
Sydney is a great and really fun example of how a passion project can take off and can really inspire a community and engage a community. So Sydney, the Sydney Museum and Archives, has been running an annual Lego exhibit for a number of years now, I think about a decade. This started as a fairly small exhibit. It was an exhibit basically of the executive director's and his son's, their own kind of personal Lego collections. The Sydney Museum has temporary exhibits that rotate on a monthly or bi-monthly basis. And January, February were pretty slow months at the museum. So they decided, let's make this fun. Let's bring in some families and provide an opportunity for people to come and have some fun in this space. And so that's how that started. Since then, it's really taken off and has become this town-wide festival over the Family Day weekend. There are businesses up and down the main street that participate in a scavenger hunt. The other cultural institutions partner as part of this. And it's gone from being this exhibit to, you know, a multi-day festival that engages a lot of people. And I think, again, kind of like what you were saying, Ryan, I don't think that was the intention at any point. But in talking to the staff there, what really became clear to me is that these opportunities kind of presented themselves and the staff had to make a decision. Do they become organizers of a townwide festival or do they stick to their kind of traditional roles and work more on, you know, things that are kind of within the walls of the museum? And I don't think that there was really any hesitation there. They took that opportunity and really became leaders within that community by taking that role. And I think that's common across all our examples. We were talking with primarily small organizations who have limited number of staff, limited resources. You know, it's a familiar story, I think, to small organizations. So scaling up is not easy. Taking on these roles, it's not easy. And it's not what you expected to do. I think one person we spoke to, they have a live collection as well. And she said, I never expected to be giving injections to a turtle as part of my museum role. But here we are. And so, I mean, just the diversity of roles that you have to take on as a museum professional can surprise you. But I think where these organizations had success is that they were willing to kind of flex the boundaries of what a museum is and what a museum professional does.
I love that idea of flexing the boundaries, because I think we see that in a lot of the case studies that you produced.
Templar Ridge Global Geopark is a UNESCO recognized geopark, and it has a similar sort of starting story as some of our other organizations. Templar Ridge lost its major industry when its last coal mine shut down. And the district was faced with challenges of possibly being closed by the province. And they were tackling these questions of like, what can be the next kind of like focus and the industry of this place. A number of individuals kind of began this process of being recognized as a global geopark, which is quite a lengthy process of applying and showing the value. So part of what I think is most interesting about this is sort of these three components of education, science, and culture that the UNESCO geopark kind of stands for. And Templar Ridge has done a really excellent job of merging those things together to show the story and the value of the geological landscape and explore that question of how does that shape our culture. And, you know, it's partly because they became recognized by UNESCO that they had to kind of answer these questions and come up with these programs and fit into other industries in the area and fit into the education curriculum in some rather more formalized ways. But it helped them tell that story of value, tell that story of impact as well. And yeah, really change the focus of tourism in that area, bring this beautiful landscape with its diversity to the world stage, really, with this global recognized geopark. The Templar Ridge Global Geopark worked with their municipality to engage with a branding and marketing strategy for the area. And they actually ended up winning an award for this partnership working together. And, you know, the Global Geopark is now part of the signage for the area, and people start to like recognize this as a result of this marketing campaign as a destination in Northern BC, as like this outdoor destination. And people come there from Alberta, they come there from further away as well. And yeah, it's definitely become very much integrated into the town there. And they've seen increase in people traveling to the area and have had success in measuring and understanding that impact based on this marketing strategy that they work together with the municipality to create.
And impact can take so many forms, as you note. And right now, a lot of museum professionals are thinking about how they can have an impact in being allies to diverse groups and supporting diversity and inclusion in their communities. And thinking about that type of impact, I'm reminded of the Lytton Chinese History Museum. Can you speak to a bit about that organization and the impact they've had in their community?
The Lytton Chinese History Museum is a really interesting story of a privately owned museum focusing on telling the story of the local history of Chinese Canadians who lived and worked in this location. And it started out with two individuals who had a different business in the area, but they learned about the property that they were working on, that it had this history of being a Chinese joss house, which is a place of prayer during the time that the railway was being built in that area, and also mining, I believe. The owner of this, Lorna, felt passionate about this. So this is another example of one of these passion projects that that really drives the development of the museum and the things that it communicates. So she did a lot of work. She connected with the other local museum and learned about the right way to undertake this project. And they built a purpose-built building for this museum, and they end up having one of the largest collections of artifacts from this time, and a really strong online collection, which she has made available through their website. So people from all over the world and BC can read about the artifacts and learn about it that way. And it's also resulted in people coming specifically to see these artifacts and to learn about the story in this community.
A theme that's emerged in your report is that crisis, while tremendously destructive, can also be an opportunity for growth and for expansion. And looking at the case studies, I think no organization really better encapsulates that idea than the Exploration Place. Can you talk about how burning down actually ended up being a turning point?
They started as a different society, and some point along that path, their building burned down and they lost most of their collection. And that is a terrible thing, obviously. But in some ways, it does present an opportunity. And I think the opportunity here was that they weren't tied to this very traditional collection or this traditional kind of collecting structure. And that's something that not only enabled them to pivot really quickly and to kind of redefine themselves, but it allowed them to really go back to what their value was in the community, why they were there, and who they were serving. I think that's so important. I was listening to the webinar yesterday that the BCMA had. Museums are not neutral, and the speaker there did a fantastic job, I think, of outlining, some of the problematic histories that collection-based or object-based collections bring to museums. And so I was reminded of a book I read a little while ago by Stephen Weil. And he said that museums really matter when their staff's traditional object-related skills are directed towards enriching both the individual lives and the general well-being of the communities they serve. And I think for me, that perfectly encapsulated what happened in Prince George, is that they were able to take their skills and redirect them towards their community rather than their collection. And so in Prince George, we see a really strong link there between the Exploration Place and the local indigenous groups, local minorities. They offer services, for example, like a daycare service, which is really far outside the traditional museum norm, obviously. But it's such an important impact in their community and such an important service that they provide. So in some ways, being split from the collection was kind of a turning point for this organization. And it really allowed them to zero in on what was important and who were they serving.
To me, it feels like it's impossible to not feel like we're living in a turning point. It seems highly likely that international travel will not happen this calendar year. Domestic tourism will be severely reduced. Governments are working on recovery plans, but haven't really announced them yet. And it seems like if you're a cultural organization, museum right now, we have the opportunity to reassess how we work and think about how we can best serve our communities during this period of transition. Looking at all of the case studies and the themes that have emerged to you, what advice would you give to cultural organizations right now?
Yeah, I had something that kind of popped to my head immediately when you asked that, Ryan, was before too much navel-gazing goes on, I would just really recommend, and I think a lot of these case studies did a good job of talking to their community, or the fact that most of these institutions are so connected and ingrained within their community and the different groups it represents, to that they either directly asked or were already part of the group that were asking for what they needed and could kind of go from that needs-based place that was really rooted in the people that the institution served.
Yeah, I have some similar thoughts that came to mind immediately. It's something that you were just speaking to as well, Brian, that the importance of also focusing on the people in your own community. So, there's a lot of interest in increasing visitor numbers and increasing tourism, but right now that might not be the right thing to focus on. So let's think about the people in our communities and what they want to get out of the museum, or what they have also to contribute and to build together with the museum. And that might be, you know, coming up with programs that are more directed at locals. And I think there's something really interesting can come out of that, which is like a strengthened sense of place. And, you know, thinking out a little further, that is so valuable. And, you know, when people do start traveling again, and we do get visitors from out of, from other places, coming to a museum that has a really strong sense of place and a really strong connection to its local community will create a more nuanced and a more interesting experience, I think, for the outside visitors as well.
The exploration place in Prince George, they were, you know, already doing that in the early days of the pandemic, and mentioned it in the interview, where they kind of, in the early days recognized that with the shift to online learning for students, they were becoming a valuable resource for blended learning. A lot of folks were kind of wanting to check facts and, you know, the importance of science-based information, and when what the center was putting out was really key. So they really started to, you know, recognize the importance and their role as, you know, meeting educational needs and being one source of truth amongst a lot of information that's going around these days.
I'm also reminded of the Sydney Museum. Like, the idea of having a Lego exhibit is not an overly complicated idea. It doesn't require a lot of stakeholders, but it seems to have resonated so strongly with that community. And I think looking at the case studies, for me, something that stands out is that you don't need to come up with the most complex multi-point, multi-year plan to succeed and have an impact. That sometimes it's about finding one thing that you care about deeply, that you do well, and then sharing that with your community.
Totally. And Ryan, you know, thinking about that example, I think that's it's so cool. And sometimes it means we have to try a few different things before we find the right thing. I mean, I think in every success story, there's probably a few failure stories as well, right? But what it raised for me when you were talking about the Facebook event for the exploration place is that sometimes those impacts that really engage our community and have, you know, real value, they're really hard to measure, or they can't be measured in the same way that our funders want them to be measured. So, like, you know, number of hits on a video on Facebook, it's going to be difficult to put that in a traditional grant application too. And so when we were thinking about kind of takeaway lessons, I think the one for me is that, yeah, we have to do work to figure out our baseline measurements, you know, keep track of visitor numbers, all that kind of thing. But I think there's also still a lot of work that needs to be done to communicate those intangible impacts as well. Communicate the things that can't be measured, like, you know, creating a safe space for your community, or leading the way in closing the doors during the COVID pandemic, or, you know, starting conversations about public health or racial inequity in the community. Those are all huge, huge impacts that you can have on your community. But they're not measurable, right? And so that's why I think we took this kind of story-based approach to this project. And I'd encourage other institutions to try taking that qualitative approach to their communicating their impact as well as a quantitative one.
Well, that segues beautifully into my next question. Something that I'm really appreciative that you've produced as a template. From my own experience, a lot of people that work in the museum field tend to be more community-focused than self-focused, and as a result, don't feel comfortable discussing the impact of their organizations or the great work they've done or the lives they've touched and changed. So can you talk a little bit about this template?
The template that we put together for organizations kind of is based on the questions that we asked ourselves and we asked the organizations we interviewed. So it's a worksheet for staff members or those involved in the organization to start to have a conversation and ask themselves some questions about the background of their organization, what shaped it, their community. There's several questions around their journey and how they got to where they are now. And then kind of asking some questions, mixture of quantitative and qualitative questions about their economic impact. So if they have any numbers, but also, you know, looking to how they fit within their community's economic development plan, discussing challenges, the makeup of their community, different groups they partner with, and then after having those conversations, kind of asking them about how their story or the insights of their organization kind of relate to the themes that we found around scaling up, increasing diversity, focusing on their strengths and the role of training and education. So I think every organization's story is different, and so every case study is going to look different. But what we found working on this project so far is that, you know, all organizations are really connected to their community and, you know, have stories to share, whether or not they're working in urban centers like around Victoria, if they're up north or very rural. And so we just want to help them share those stories and kind of help them kind of measure where they're at and assist with that planning.
Now that you've had a chance to speak to organizations across the province and look at some common steps towards creating impact, what are some recommendations for ways they can think about taking steps to create greater impact in their communities?
Do we want to do a round table on this one again?
Good call. Yeah. Do you want to start, Brian?
Oh, sure. Taking steps right now, obviously, is going to seem pretty overwhelming, but I think most organizations across the province probably have a lot of the tools that they need to start taking these steps already, which is great. I mean, in the case studies that we talked to, they were similarly small organizations, you know, often started kind of from a grassroots effort, and they were able to raise their profile in the community and also raise the community along with them. And so I think there are tools that you have already, and probably that just means kind of thinking about what the community needs. I know we're all tied to our museum's or organization's mission, but you can be really flexible and creative about how you achieve that mission, right? And so identifying a need and trying to fill that need within your mission and values is a really good place to start. On the flip side, I think, you know, we do a lot of trying to figure out our impact looking backwards, you know, trying to measure numbers for the past year or past 2 years or something like that. It might be easier at this point, or it might be more valuable at this point to figure out what the value that you want to add to your community is. What is the impact that you want to have? And then start measuring it now. You know, don't try and look back and see whether you've had this many visitor numbers or something like that. Communicate the value that you want to have and start figuring out how to measure that looking forward. And that gives you a bit of a plan and some benchmarks that you can kind of create and work together to create. And it allows you to look forward based on a goal. I think for me, that would be my recommendation.
What I see as a really important part of this is partnerships and that sense of community. So thinking about the organization and sort of similar to what Brian said, like hone in on what the mission is and also what your strengths are. And then with that, holding that in your mind, sort of start to look outward for potential partnerships. And these could be things that, you know, come quick to mind, like the city or another museum or a library, but also think about restaurants, think about other businesses, and bring your lens and your focus and strength and start to think about what kind of opportunities there could be to work together. To strengthen that sense of community and to bring the organization out and into the world as well.
Yeah, I really agree with that, Laura. And I think to build on what you've said and kind of reflect back to what Brian was saying, is easy to play the numbers game, but similar to, you know, in addition to looking backwards, we need to look forwards. And in addition to looking outwards and looking kind of working with your community and organizations within your community, we need to look inwards. And what we saw as a key part of the resiliency of these organizations is really developing teams. And, you know, maybe it's not the first thing that jumps to mind when you think about economic impact, but having skilled teams, knowing what your collections policy is, you know, what you take in, what you leave, and being able to communicate that were half the battle. And those were two of the really key strategies that we saw with these organizations and that we'd recommend to others.
Brian, Esther, Laura, thank you so much for joining me today for this chat. And thank you so much for the great work you did on the economic impact study. If people want to learn more about Accession Consulting, where can they find you?
Well, good question. We have a website. That's probably the easiest place to find us. So we're at accessionconsulting.ca.